Today, we're talking Tony White and his 3-3-5 defense. Who is he? What do you need to know? And can this defense lead Florida State back to glory, Michael? And I tell you what, man, the more I started digging into this, the more excited I got. You know, we talked last week about how I was trying to push the Kool-Aid glass away, Michael. But you know what goes great with a defensive preview here? I brought the Kool-Aid out, man, because I am sipping. I'm just getting excited, dude. I mean, you know, hey, look, the more I watch, the more I like him. I watched his press conference the other day. The man is all business, so I really like the mentality there. So I can't wait to dig into this defense. Now, if you guys have been a member or watching this channel, you know we just did our offensive preview. And how we did that is we broke it into two parts. We start with the scheme and the coordinator, then we talk personnel. And so defense, we figured we'd do the same way. We're going to start in part one with the Tony White, just who he is, a little bit about him. We're going to talk that 3-3-5 scheme, break it down for you guys from a fan's perspective, what you need to know. And then part two, which we'll get out for you guys as soon as possible, we'll be talking personnel. So, Michael, before we jump into that, man, only 3 weeks left until kickoff. Team is over in Jacksonville for week two of camp, and you can really feel the excitement building, man. We're getting close, and you know, you're starting to ramp up all the content and everything like that. So, man, it's what, 3 weeks, and we'll be back in Doak, man. I can't wait for it.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. Like, I definitely have been sipping. I haven't been gulping. I've been sipping on the Kool-Aid, which is smart.
That's a safe way to do it.
Yeah, safe way to get into it. But no, I'm really excited for it. I've been seeing pictures of Doak. I've been seeing pictures of the FO, the football only facility. I've been seeing the there at Jacksonville. So I'm jonesing. I'm already thinking about, okay, like, I got to go buy a new hat for the season. I got to buy new gear from Alumni Hall so I can be ready for the season. So I'm ready to go, man. Let's get into it.
Yeah, and you know, I was going to save this for whenever we did our final kind of season preview, which is coming up. That's going to be after the defense. We're going to talk all about kind of our final season projections and everything like that. But Michael, you know, really the thing about this team, man, and I'll probably repeat this and some other things in that episode, but what, you know, the crazy thing for me is everyone puts this season, I've talked about this before, everybody puts this season in a box of what it can be. You know, the only reason that people can justify this season not being good or above expectations is because of last season.
That's right.
And the majority of this team and staff had nothing to do with last year. So when you start looking into things and you look at the new staff and you look at the pieces they've acquired, there's no reason. There's more reason that says Florida State can have a good season, a better than expected season, than a bad season. And so as we go through these previews, you're going to see kind of the things that we're talking about here. So, Michael, before we jump into the full-on defensive talk, we're going to do some fall camp updates. Like we told you guys, fall camp is going on right now. It's closed, so there's only so many things we can get out of this. But at the same time, we don't really have time to do just specific camp update episodes, so we want to kind of bring you these at the beginning of the show. And, of course, they are relevant to what we're going to talk about today. And so the first thing, I watched the coaches' luncheon. I've been watching the post-camp and practice interviews and things like that. One of the things that I thought might be a little bit underrated to one of the offseason moves here is the hiring of Zach Arnett. And they talked about this a little bit where, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting story, right? He played for Tony White at New Mexico, and he also runs a 3-3-5 defense, obviously kind of learned under Tony White there. But the one thing they talked about is, man, he is not scared to be a voice in the room. And this is a guy who maybe he didn't have a lot of success as a head coach, but he's been a defensive coordinator at a SEC school. He's been a head coach at a, you know, Power Four SEC school there. So I think it's more than bringing in some, you know, like maybe a, no disrespect, like a former player or anything like that, but you've had a guy who runs a similar system.
Right.
And he's done it at the highest level, and he's not scared to go in there and be like, hey, look, this is what I'm seeing. They talked about how they've kind of critique some things of his to kind of show the way they want to do it. But he's also said, like, hey, here's some things where I think you can improve. And so I, you know, one of the things we talked about with that old staff was we felt like there was maybe a lot of yes men there.
Absolutely.
And I think now, even down to the not assistants, but the analyst, you have guys who are kind of on that higher level, guys who aren't scared to kind of challenge what you're thinking if they don't like something that they see. And so, man, just having him in the room, I think, is going to be big. Having a former head coach in DC, you know, kind of breaking down the teams ahead, knowing the same scheme that you're going to run, man, I think that's going to be huge for this defense. And the interesting part of that story is, and I didn't know this until I started doing this research, Dino Babers actually tried to hire, he actually did hire Zach Arnett at Syracuse in 2020, but he left like a week later to take the Mississippi State job, which opened the door for Tony White to get hired. And now Zach Arnett works for Tony White at FSU. So, man, it's crazy how the coaching circle works. But I definitely think Zach Arnett is going to be a big-time asset for this defense in the season.
Listen, you want those kinds of voices in the room. I mean, you want those kind of voices that the players are going to respect, they're going to listen to, especially someone as seasoned as Zach Arnett, who has, you know, like you said, I mean, regardless of what you think about Mississippi State as the basement dwellers of the SEC, it's still the SEC. It's still a prominent conference. He had seminal success, you know, there as far as defensive schemes and stuff like that. Obviously, he was taking over for the, you know, rest in peace, Mike Leach.
Which was a tough situation to go into.
But the guy knows ball. He knows the 335 defense. To have another person who can really break, like you said, break down the schemes and know what he's doing to aid Tony White in that defense, yeah, of course, it's going to pay dividends long term.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Now, talking about big boost for the defense, now we hinted at this news last week, but we actually got confirmation this week that defensive line transfer from Tennessee, Jason Jenkins, is expected to be full go this week. I heard Mike Norvell, or I think it was actually Pot Roast, was talking about how they're still making him wear a brace, even though he doesn't want to, but he was out there and able to go through drills kind of at full speed today. Or yesterday, whenever they did the interview. So, man, that's going to be huge to get him back. I mean, Tony White talked about him in the coach's luncheon, 6'6", 275, twitchy athlete who can play inside or outside for you. And really, man, he was part – I mean, he got an increasing workload throughout the season. We're going to talk about him more in the personnel. But he was just kind of buried on a really, really deep defensive line. But there was a lot of people that talked about him when he left Tennessee is like, you know, typically people like to kind of crap on their transfers right when they leave. Like, oh, well, they weren't any good anyway. That's not the case with Jason Jenkins. A lot of people are like, look, man, he was really good. He just really didn't get a lot of body of work. So the question was he going to be ready for Alabama? And it was kind of looking close, but now it looks like that's going to be a full go. He'll be ready for that game. And, man, that's going to be huge because, really, this was a projected starter and one of your best defensive linemen on the roster this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you brought him in. You anticipated that he would be a huge contributor. And then, of course, when the injury happened, you know, there was talks that you probably wouldn't see him until probably 6-7 games into the season.
Yeah.
So to find out now that he is on pace to potentially contribute to the Alabama game, you know, probably not starting, I would assume, but definitely being a major contributor, big time news. I know most of Florida State fans, if not all, saw that news and had the confirmation from Mike Norvell. That huge, big time.
Yeah, hopefully he will start. I mean, you figure he's got about 3 more weeks to work himself back into game shape, but game shape's different. So like you said, as long as you can have him for a majority of that game. But sticking with the defensive lineman here, man, there's been a lot of talk about Kevin Wynn and how strong he is. We heard Daryl Jackson talk about it. I heard Pot Roast talk about it the other day in an interview there, how much of a hard worker he is. Now, we pretty much expected Kevin Wynn to be a part of this plan in 2025 anyway, because there's not a ton of depth at defensive tackle, and he's one of the most talented that you got. He's just a freshman. But it really sounds like he's going to be more of a factor than we originally expected, and that's really good, man, to see a freshman who's already able to come on and contribute to this defense. It just adds to the depth to have a guy who's, you know, strong and a hard worker and kind of understands things, and said he takes coaching well. So, you know, there might be some mistakes with a freshman, but anytime you can get added depth from a guy that maybe you didn't expect to contribute a lot in year one, that's another boost for the defensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has been kind of part of that plan. I mean, obviously it's a little concerning that you're having to rely so heavily on freshmen this early on, you know, on that defensive line, which goes to, you know, the issues of depth that we talked about throughout the summer. You can go back and watch those episodes, but it's also really great that you're seeing progress, that the coaches are entrusting, you know, critical playing time to not just Kevin Wynn, but to the Siri twins. I mean, we're hearing a lot about them as well, too, that they're stepping up. They're making plays. They're flashing in practice. So I think it's kind of that bittersweet kind of thing. Like, it's sweet that these freshmen are really, really like showing themselves. Also kind of like that we're having to rely on freshmen this early on.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with just kind of the way the defensive line recruiting has been recently. Yep. You know, in the past few years, we've had to rely on transfers and things like that. So, you know, to have him come in, I think he was one of your highest rated defensive tackle commits in like the last 10 years. So, I mean, it's good to see that he's ready to go year one. That would be great. But another contributor that kind of showed up out of nowhere is Jaden Jones.
Yeah.
There has been a lot of talk about this guy being possibly ready to contribute this year. We know they brought him in from JUCO, played a couple of snaps, not a lot in 23, but then 24 missed the entire season. Norvell talked about how he had two catastrophic injuries. Mm-hmm. Hasn't had a lot of on-field experience, but they talked about, man, he's a good leader for the young guys. And I mean, he's a big guy. I think he's like 6'5", 270 something. So, I mean, you were hoping that he could be a part of this defense when he got here from JUCO. And so now, just again, another piece added to the depth. But it's good to hear that he's healthy. He's moving around. He trusts whatever, you know, I think it was a leg injury. He trusts that leg. He's playing kind of free. And so, man, I'm excited to see him back in the fold as well.
Yeah, I mean, because when you have an injury like that, you know, it can always be that debilitating, you know, phantom.
Will you ever be your old self? Yeah,
will you ever be your old self? Will you ever be able to cut the way you need to move the way you do to launch, you know, with a defensive player being able to that thrust of speed and burst when you're going into a tackle, all of that matters. And so to hear that he's actually getting into that, getting back into that rhythm and that naturalness, that's big time for him.
Yeah. And then the other thing was just came out of camp yesterday. Deontay McCray, man, I like Deontay McCray after hearing his interview. So he is from Jacksonville and the team is obviously practicing in Jacksonville. And one of the things he said, they're like, you know, hey, you're a native. You got your family out here. And he said, no, I told him to stay home because I want guys to know I'm locked in. I want to keep the focus on the team. But one thing that McCray talked about was how everyone on this defensive line is going to give 100% effort on every play.
Yeah.
And T-Knight mentioned this too. He said, look, if we only got four guys who are going to play fast and downhill, well, then that's just what we're going to roll with. So really right now, guys just have to fight for time on the field. And man, I think when you talk about just kind of the thing with the family, the 100% effort and all that stuff, there's just such a renewed sense of energy and effort and commitment to getting better amongst this team that really just makes me feel like they're going to take that jump. Because I think that to me was the one thing that was missing last year. Like that roster was not a 2-10 roster.
No.
I don't know how they got 2-10 out of it, but I think there was a lot of, you know, the loafing, the kind of selfishness. This feels like an entirely different mentality this year. And so to hear him talk about like, no, man, I don't even want my family. Of course, he said, I'm going to see him at some point this week. But like, I don't even want him here, man, because we're so focused. We're so locked in and that everybody's just playing hard right now. Man, that is a welcome change to hear after last year's loafing problems.
Well, it's kind of like a house, Jesse. It's like, you know, you buy a house and you walk into it and it has all the bones and the structures and the walls and the plaster and all that stuff, pictures. And for some reason, it just doesn't work out. So what do? You get in there and you gut it. You gut it down to its stilts, right? And you basically replace about 70 to 80% of the house. And then when you walk into it, it feels good. It feels fresh. It works for you. It's doing the thing it needs to do for you. Well, Mike Norvell had basically to do the same thing with the program last year. I mean,
we had foundation problems. He had to take a bulldozer
to part of it and gut a lot of it. I mean, you talk about replacing 65 to 70% of the program, staff, coaches, players, right? And then reestablish the principle that he had already had from being here, right? You know, they kind of got away from that after, you know, everything had happened at the end of 23 and then obviously 2-10 season. So it's so refreshing to hear this steady commitment, this urgency, you know, like we heard at the ACC Media Days, this desperation to get back to that place of elite football at Florida State.
Yeah, and when you talk about mentality, I don't think there's anyone you should bring up besides Jeremiah Wilson first.
Yeah,
like this guy is a ball of energy. And the thing that he talked about is how like, man, and the coaches have said too, he is the first one in the door, the last one to leave. He's here on Saturdays. And that started to rub off on guys, which is nice. He said, man, there's some young guys who are showing up with me now, to get extra work in. And like, again, man, I think a lot of that is just the player accountability, right? Yeah. You always want it to be a player-led team. Most of the good teams are player-led teams, and that's what it feels like what you got with this team. Now, the last thing I want to share on the camp thing here is just some notes from scrimmage number one that happened last Tuesday. They didn't get to spend much time in Doak because of weather. They had to move to the IPF there. But it sounded like, man, there's some good and there's some bad. Mm-hmm. Both sides, you know, defensive coaches, offensive coaches, Mike Norvell talked about there's a lot to clean up. Penalties were one of the number one things that were a problem, especially on defense that extended drives. There were missed opportunities for sacks and at least one interception that ended up being a tip ball touchdown. Mike Norvell mentioned there was some turnovers left on the table in Jacksonville the other day as well. But what the scrimmage does, he said they really wanted to push them early on, right, to kind of see where they're at, because he's like, you know, maybe typically they don't scrimmage that early, but it gives you an opportunity to kind of see where their team is at, and it also gives you a chance to get some good film to go back and review and see if there's things that are correctable. So a lot of the stuff I think is just maybe just early camp stuff that they'll be able to get corrected. But, you know, again, man, I think this just goes to show that, like, it's going to be a sprint to get ready for that Bama game, because there was some good and there, but sounds like, you know, Tony White, man, I have become a huge Tony White fan. Like, the man is just brutally honest, right? In the press conference, you know, he said, we all got something to damn prove on defense, right? I love that part. He said, if you aren't giving 100%, if you're shying away from contact, it's on film. We'll see it. And you won't play. I love that mentality from this defense, man, because that's exactly what we saw last year. So a lot to clean up. But I think that it's just an early part of camp. Both coordinators talked about how a lot of times you're going to run your base stuff to try and let the other coordinator do some install. So I think that has something to do with it too. And before I kick it back to you, man, one thing that I heard Mike Norvell say that I like, we're not PBU. We're DBU. And I'll say this, man, from what we saw at Media Days to the way he just carries himself, I think Norvell's kind of got his swag back, man. And I think he knows that he's got a better staff around him and he's got a good team this year.
Yeah, you know, you know what I think about is, when I was a kid, I used to, and my mom be like, clean your room, clean your room, clean your room. And I'd be like, okay, I will, you know. And it wouldn't get clean, it'd get more
messy. You don't clean it, I'm going to clean it for you.
Well, not even that. But if you don't clean it, I'm about to clean you.
I'm
going to
clean your behind.
Yeah, I'm going to clean your behind, right? Your butt. And then you get that whooping, or you get the threat of the whooping. And what are you doing? Boy, that room looks spick and span. And then you volunteering to clean everybody else's room.
Exactly.
Because you ain't trying to get a whooping, right? Mike Norvell, what you call swag, I call he ain't trying to get a whooping. He is walking around just trying to instill confidence, trying to instill the desperation, that urgency in that as well. And I love that Tony White's also doing the same thing. He's telling those boys, like, listen, you're not going to come to Florida State to just loaf or to just not be physical or to not make plays where we're supposed to be. You know, shades of Mickey Andrews, get in them. Like, get on them, right? And yeah, you know, I heard the same thing about the drop pass, the drop interception opportunities. Man, they've got to make those, because those are game changing plays. Yeah. I know you're on defense. That's why that's because you can't catch the ball, but you got to figure out a way to catch some balls. You got to figure out a way to do that. You know, and I know this is a defensive preview, but, you know, I think one of the things that really stuck out to me was just the offensive side and Tommy Castellano's inaccuracy. That's some of the things that came out of there as well too. So both coordinators talked about that. Mike Norvell talked about, you know, just so much to clean up, so much to prove, but he was pleased with the effort, the energy, and they're going to keep pushing them, and that's what they need to do.
Yeah. And I will say, for the offensive side of things, the one thing that I did hear him say with Tommy was, like, they're just throwing a ton at him right now to see what he excels at. So when they get ready to start kind of honing in for Bama, they can kind of whittle down the offense to, like, okay, look, this is what he does well.
Right.
You know, the one clip that came out was the ball was underthrown, but man, what a freaking catch by Deuce Robinson. I mean, that's what you brought him here to do. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like the more time they get, you know, the offense, this is really the offensive line, their first time they've been able to practice together, they'll gel some more. So it's just really, it's just working. But again, like we said, man, Bama is right around the corner. And so you really have to kind of get things going and clean up those mistakes, because if you don't in game one, it's going to come back to bite you. So, Michael, let's go ahead and transition into the defensive preview now. But before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, which you already mentioned once, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Yeah. Look, these guys got great gear, everything you need, from hats to shirts to tailgating, game day supplies, all that stuff. Convenient location right there in Tallahassee at 1415 Timber Lane Road, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. They just launched a new website. There might be some bugs with it. Hey, look, I do our website here and I know all about that, but they'll get it hammered out. But man, they got amazing gear. I've got some stuff put in my cart for this upcoming season, because, you know, as we joked about before, the luck is worn off your lucky shirt, exactly, or your lucky hat. So it's time to replace it all. So yeah, make sure you check those guys out, and don't forget to save 10% with code SPEAR. So we appreciate those guys rocking with us, and we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. So getting into this defensive preview, Michael, Tony White comes to Florida State from Nebraska. You know, this actually, man, when he got hired, this was not one of the ones I had on my watch list, right? And I kind of didn't know a whole lot about him. But the more I've looked into him, the better I feel about this is going to be a home run hire. And so let's talk about the experience that does make him a little bit proven here. So starting out, New Mexico linebacker coach back in 2008. Then he stayed for a while here at San Diego State as the cornerbacks coach. Then went to Arizona State, also as the cornerbacks coach in 2018 and 2019. He also served as the pass game coordinator in 2019. And fun fact, Michael, he did serve as interim DC for one game, and that game was the Florida State. Now, he did give up 470 yards to FSU that year, but only 14 points and got the win for the Sun Devils. So that was kind of our first taste of Tony White. And you know, the funny thing is, man, Mike Norvell just has a thing for people that he's seen that he's gone against, right? I mean, you bring in Castellanos, you bring in the defensive coordinator, guys that you know, it's just the apple of his eye is the next guy to get hired. So, you know, if someone like hangs 50 on us or whatever, that's going to be our next offensive coordinator. That was interesting that he did get to play against us as well. Then he gets his first defensive coordinator job at Syracuse with Dino Babers there before he spent three seasons and then went to Nebraska as the DC for a couple years, and now he's at Florida State. And so when we talk about that experience, Michael, I want to start by talking about Syracuse when he got his first DC job, being that's what he's serving here at Florida State. And really with Gus Malzahn, there's so much history that you kind of have to compile it right into averages. But with Tony White only having 5 years, I want to focus on Syracuse and then talk about Nebraska separately. And when you talk about that defense at Syracuse, look, the 2020 defense wasn't great, right? It took a dip the first year that he was there. But I think there's some context that should be provided. First off, he took over a defense that was 88th in scoring defense, 115th in total defense, 110th in passing defense, and 109th in rushing defense. That 2019 Syracuse defense gave up 63 points to a 3-9 Maryland team, 58 points to Boston College. I don't know that Boston College has ever scored 58 points, maybe in a season, and then 56 to Louisville. So basically, they sucked, right? They were terrible. And then on top of that, man, he took over during the pandemic season. He faced five top 30 offenses his first year, and Syracuse was ranked dead last or second to last in the ACC in talent every single year he was there. So I think that's really important context to provide because, man, my guy had everything working against him in year one. You were a brand new DC. You had a tough slate of offenses to go against there. Not much talent in the cupboard to work with. And it was the COVID season. Yeah. But after that, you can see where he skyrocketed, right? The first year, yes, it took a dip. Things weren't really that great, didn't really get any better. But when you look at 21, this is where things really started to take off for them. They climbed 24 spots in scoring defense, 97 spots in total defense, 84 spots in passing defense, and 83 spots in rushing defense. I mean, you're talking about he cut off over 130 yards off their total defense there. And so, man, it got better in every category except run defense, which was still good in year three. So, man, you could see kind of that initial dip with the COVID season and all that stuff. But, man, then it took a meteoric jump, and it continued to get better. And then also what I found interesting, too, was I looked at Syracuse 2023, and every facet of the defense, scoring, total, pass, and rush, got worse when he left. So that was a big one, man. I mean, that was a big first jump for him as a DC that year. And, you know, before we move on to Nebraska, when you look back at Syracuse, it's just really impressive what he was able to do knowing the limitations that he had, right? Again, the one thing that I want to keep in your mind here is that Syracuse was dead last or second to last in talent ranking per the 247 composite every single year that he was there. So the talent that he walked into at Nebraska was totally different, and the talent that he's going to walk into Florida State is totally different. But man, right. You could see where even as a brand new DC, all the challenges that he faced, once that first year kind of got out from under him, because he had never served it as a DC before, right, other than that one game. Man, they took a massive jump. And Nebraska did the same thing. We'll talk about that in a minute. So you're kind of wondering if you can see that at Florida State as well.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you have to think about the talent that he had when he first got to Syracuse. And then, of course, his recruiting prowess, you know, as he began to recruit the type of players he wanted to have in that 3-3-5 defense. And we're going to talk about the type of players you need for that defense.
Yeah.
And so as you get those types of players, you know, then that you're running the scheme better, obviously probably the schedule helps line up. And so you can see the improvement there. So it's not that you completely dismiss what he did in 2020, but you have to understand it through the context of as it goes.
Yeah. And just seeing what Mike Norvell went through at Florida State in that COVID season, where you couldn't really even coach your players. You had to do through Zoom and stuff like that. I pretty much give everybody a mulligan on that one, to be honest. But let's talk. I mean, whatever happened, happened. But like, there's so many outlying things that happened with that season. I just kind of look at it as it is what it is.
Right.
But the next step here, he leaves Syracuse and goes to Nebraska. Now, the thing about Nebraska, the situation that he walked into wasn't quite as bad as Syracuse, but it wasn't exactly good either. 77th in scoring defense, 100th in total defense, 68th in pass defense, and 108th in rush defense. But the difference here was Nebraska was in the top half of the Big Ten in talent both years that he was there. So while the defense wasn't good, there were at least tools to work with, and the improvement was once again off the charts.
Right.
In year one at Nebraska, they climbed 64 spots in scoring defense, 89 spots in total defense, 28 in pass defense, and 99, almost 100 spots they improved in rushing defense. That is just daggone impressive, man. And they backed it up with an equally impressive season in year two. And now one thing that I did go back and look at here, and I mean, again, when you look at the numbers at Nebraska, this was obviously his best defenses. I mean, when you talk about Syracuse here, you know, he still had a really impressive numbers here with the 40th ranked defense in 2022 as far as scoring goes. You had a couple fringe 18 and 21st top 20 defenses as far as total defense there. You had a couple of, you know, top 30 pass and rush defenses. But Nebraska, man, the numbers were just off the chart. I mean, you're talking about top 20 in scoring defense, top 20 in total defense, and top 10 in rush defense. So it was, I mean, it's just really impressive what he's been able to do as a defensive coordinator there. And the one thing that I did go back and look at, right, was kind of the schedule that he faced leading up to that, because I wanted to look at it and say, okay, well, maybe you just had a really easy schedule. Maybe that's why, just to kind of rule out any factors that may have skewed the stats here. And the schedule was pretty much similar at both places prior to his arrival. So that's not the reason that they improved. Now, when you talk about as a coordinator as a whole, man, at Syracuse, he faced tougher offenses with less talent. At Nebraska, he faced weaker offenses with significantly more talent. But at Florida State, he'll be facing a kind of Syracuse-like schedule playing in the ACC, but with a boatload more talent than he ever had at Syracuse, and more talent than he had at Nebraska. And like I talked about, man, that really makes you excited for the jump Florida State could take in year one, because you already kind of walk into a, you know, let's face it, man, last year was what it was, but the defense wasn't terrible. Now, granted, you have a lot of new starters this year, so it's a lot of different people, pieces in the cabinet there. But man, I mean, you can see the jump that he took in from 20 to 21. And as soon as he walked into Nebraska, and now he's basically walking into a better situation at Florida State. So, man, it kind of makes your mouth water for what he can do with this defense right away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the talent level from Nebraska to what he's going to inherit here. I mean, you already imagine that if he can produce the type of defenses that he did at Nebraska with that talent, what could he do here with this talent? Exactly. Now, I know there are going to be some of you fans out there that are like, well, but it's the Big Ten, you know, they're not facing the high-flying offenses that he's going to see in the ACC. You know, they throw it around a lot more. In the Big Ten is like, you know, two clouds and a yard of dust, or 2 yards and something like that. You know what I meant?
And two clouds and a yard of dust, maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? But like, for sure. And I totally, look, I can hear that argument.
Yeah.
But football is football, right?
Exactly.
And when you have the kind of talent, it doesn't matter what type of offenses you're facing, you're still going to be able to produce the type of results that you get if you coach well, develop well, and get the right kind of talent. So to see I'm really eager to see how Tony White executes his defense and the results that it'll be based on the talent level here at Florida State.
Yeah, because again, like we said, you're going to go against tougher offenses in the ACC, but you're going to have more talent to do it with.
Right.
Now, you bring up a good point, and I do want to elaborate that towards the end when we get into maybe some concerns with this defense. I've talked about this before. But the thing is, like, yes, that is a very valid argument. Like, the offenses in the Big Ten aren't really great, right? There's a couple of good ones now that they've expanded, like Oregon and things like that. But in Syracuse at 2020, in Syracuse of 2022, the average offensive rank was 68. They faced three top 30 offenses and three ranked outside of the top 100. In 2024 at Nebraska, the average offensive rank was 70th, only two spots different, with three top 30 offenses and four teams ranked outside of the top 100. So almost identical here. And you can see what he was able to do, top 20 defense, with that more talent against a very similar set of offenses. In case you were curious, based on 2024 stats, and obviously teams are allowed to get better or worse throughout the season, offseason, Florida State is going to be facing a very similar schedule kind of to what he faced in 2021 Syracuse. 61st average rank, four top 30 offenses, two outside of the top 100. Florida State, based on 2024 and 25, your average offense rank is 63rd with four top 30 offenses and three outside the top 100. So pretty similar there, but again, you're going at it with Syracuse with a top 70. I think they were the 70th most talented roster, where Florida State is going to be somewhere in the top 20. So it's just a massive difference. And so, Michael, now that you got a kind of history of Tony White, his defenses, and what he's been able to do as a coordinator, let's transition into the scheme and talk about this 3-3-5 defense that he brings. Now, this formation was popularized by his mentor, Rocky Long, back in the day. The 3-3-5 is designed to be flexible and adaptable, allowing defenders to play fast and aggressively while presenting multiple looks to confuse offenses. One of the things Tony White has said is that it is easy to teach and allows you to get into multiple packages. That means you can get guys in the game in different ways to play to their strength of what they're good at. Really, this kind of became popular because it was hard to keep a roster stacked with big defensive tackles, which is actually something that Tony White talked about in his open introductory press conference, where he's like, look, I had really just coached at a bunch of places where you couldn't recruit a bunch of Derek. Right. And so you kind of had this is built to use smaller players, right? They say it's easier in the 3-3-5 or just in general to kind of convert that linebacker into a defensive line and then into maybe a linebacker. If you have undersized guys, it gets more speed on the field. But the thing that's different, right, is Florida State kind of already had a handful of big body defensive tackles. So he kind of walks in with a defense built based on one set of skill sets, but he already has kind of the skill sets that it was built to cover up. So you kind of get a little bit of both, which I really like. And it's a very versatile defensive formation. It allows you to show 3-4 or even 5-man fronts, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Now, some of the main advantages to this defense are you can run a wide range of blitzes and coverages. Yep. Really, out of any one of your sets, even your base set, you just kind of keep the defense on their toes. They never really know what you're going to throw at them. It forces the O-line into a lot of single blocks, and offensive linemen don't like single blocks because when you lose, it can turn into chaos in the backfield. It also allows you to easily drop 8 into coverage without dropping a defensive lineman into coverage, which is nice because you never really want 6'2", 275 defensive end playing zone coverage for you because you're probably going to get another advantage of it. And it also creates depth on the defense by not stacking everyone on the line of scrimmage pre-snap. And I don't mean depth as in depth chart. I mean depth as in when you look at the depth on the field, right? If you have, you know, 6 guys on the line of scrimmage, the way the offensive line worked, and I say this because I played offensive line in high school, you identify certain guys. I got him, you got him, pass him off, blitz pickup, things like that. You can adjust the protection. When you have a really deep defense on the way the field is, where you got guys moving and shifting and you don't really know who's coming from where, it can be really hard to communicate those blitz pickups. And so this is what causes that confusion from the offensive line and the running backs and their protections. And so that's what makes them be able to create pressure from a lot of different looks. And I will say this, man, every time you hear someone talk about this defense, they hate facing it.
Yeah.
I heard a clip where Urban Meyer talked about it. I talked to Tommy Castellanos about this as well, which I got a quote that I'll talk about there in a second with him. And I also want to say this. Now, the one name that's probably going to pop into your mind when you talk about 3-3-5 in the ACC is NC State, because they ran it for a long time, and they were notorious for having a good defense. Well, they ran it for 6 years under former DC Tony Gibson, and they finished top three in the conference in scoring defense 3 of 6 years. So this is a defense, we've already seen it with him at Syracuse and with NC State. It can be successful in this conference against these types of offenses that you'll face.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's been a lot of like consternation around this defense. Like, is it a good defense? Does it actually work? Is it viable? It's actually very viable, especially for the complexity that it gives the offense. I mean, you can be in the same shell, when we say shell, we're talking about the base look of the defense, right?
Yeah.
You can be in the same base shell. You can go 3-3-5. So three hand in the dirt, three linebackers, 3-5 defensive backs. You could even go 3-5-3, three hand in the dirt, three linebackers with two of the defensive backs tight end to that, and then three defensive backs out wide. Regardless of what you do, it looks like the same look to the offense.
Yeah.
But then you can go to one high shell, you can go to 3-3 stack, you can do all that and still be in a cover one, which is you got a safety that's going deep. You can be in a cover two. You got two safeties going deep. You can do cover three, one safety going deep, two corners going deep. And the offense can't tip off from that because they're right. Seeing the same basic shell that you can add rushers to different spots that allows you to then disguise the blitz that you might be doing. Slanting is a big way as well too. There's so much versatility and flexibility with this 3-3-5. That's why people like Urban Meyer and Nick Saban and all of them hate this defense.
Yeah, and that's why I love it, because mm-hmm. I think it's going to create a lot of problems, because like you said, it creates confusion for the quarterback, for the offensive coordinator, because they can't predict what's coming. You can do so much stuff out of it, especially out of your base formation. It confuses the offensive linemen. So, you know, if you drop eight into coverage, I was watching one where, you know, they dropped eight into coverage and the quarterback was like, you don't typically see eight in coverage. So
right.
now your eyes got to start wandering. And then that's when the pressure can get to you.
That's right.
So let's talk. We're talking a lot about formations here. Michael, let's break down the base formation and a couple of different ones that they'll run out of it and how they get these runs. We'll talk about the 3-3-5 in general. And we're going to approach this again from a fan first perspective, as if maybe some of you guys probably already know a lot of this stuff. Some mm-hmm. of you guys may have never heard of the 3-3-5 mm-hmm. ever, right? And so we're going to kind of talk about it from that for that mindset there. So as you already mentioned, the 3-3-5 consists of three down linemen, three linebackers, and five defensive backs in its base set. This creates a six-man box with five over the top in the secondary. Now, the one important thing about this is defensive ends being able to set the edge when we're talking about the defensive super line important. Is absolutely critical, which is one of the things that does make me a little bit nervous this mm-hmm. year, because we don't have that proven edge player. So that's going to be something to kind of keep your eye on as the season progresses, because that's a really, really important position in this defense. But with Tony White's philosophy, it's to attack with numbers, be multiple, and be aggressive. It's rare that you will not see a six-man box, but how that box looks can change a lot pre-snap, right?
Yep.
They got that rover safety that can come down and give you a seventh man in the box. There's a lot of different things they can do out of this. So your base defensive line, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw a slide up here to kind of give you, for those of you watching on YouTube, if you're watching on audio only, we'll make it make sense for you here. But this is just your base set out of a 3-3-5, right? So your defensive line, you have a true zero technique, which is lined up head up over the center, straight on top. And the center hates that, because you already have to worry about getting the ball off and a good snap. Now you got, you know, 6'6", 350, Daryl Jackson staring you right in the face. And so you hope you can get some help from your guard if he's not already kind of put you on your bottom before that happens. Then you also have 2-5 techniques, which are lined up outside of the offensive tackles. This is your three-man front. The ends will adjust based on a tight end or a halfback placement inside the box, and the nose tackle can move around as well. The linebackers are dubbed Sam, Mike, and Will for strong, middle, and weak side linebackers. In the base alignment, they will line up about 5 yards deep with the Sam and Will head up over the tackles, and the Mike will be in a zero technique. Most often, again, they can move around a lot behind the nose. The linebackers adjust and roam based on formations and to show and disguise blitzes. The secondary is two corners, a field safety, a boundary safety to the short side of the field, and a rover in the middle. Now, the rover typically always is going to line up between your field safety and your boundary safety, and the secondary does a lot of the adjusting, so the box can typically stay consistent. The rover is the one most interesting position, right? Because the rover safety acts like a link in a chain between your two cover safeties. This is the guy that allows you to easily add a seventh player in the box if you've got a heavy running team or something like that. The cover safeties will typically help cover the rover from being exposed in coverage because this is the guy that maybe is a little bigger, you know, maybe has a little more strength, maybe more like a linebacker build. Now, for us, it's probably going to be Earl Little Jr., so you don't really have to worry about that, but it's just, it's a way to keep him from getting exposed in coverage. And the best way to think of this is that it's three links in a chain, right? When one moves, the other two are going to move. So if you're shifting, they're all going to kind of shift together.
Yeah.
And so that's something to keep in mind there as well. Now they do like to run a lot of zones, so guys can keep their eyes on the run as well. Zone eyes is what Tony White likes to call it.
Yeah.
And the D-line runs a lot of stunts and twists, and linebackers will do a lot of simulated pressures.
Yep.
And that helps create confusion on the offensive line. So, Michael, before we get into how they create the different fronts, which we'll talk about next, just kind of give me some thoughts on the overall layout of this defense.
Yeah, like first, as we're looking at, can we go back to that screen? Because I want to make sure we cover something there. So when Jesse talks about the field safety, boundary safety, if you're not like up with the football lingo, basically the boundary safety is to the short side of the field, as Jesse said, which is closest to the sideline on the hash that the ball is placed on. The field safety is to the wide side of the field, which is the other hash that the ball is not placed on. And so when you're looking at this, a lot of what makes this defense really complicated is, as Jesse said, that you have these linebackers, the Will, the Mike, the Sam, they're moving around. They're simulating pressure. They're changing. And as they're moving, if the Will moves, then the Mike and Sam are going to move. They're a chain. If the field safety moves or the rover moves, then the boundary safety and the field safety is all moving, right? What you might wonder, well, okay, so like in this example we're giving you with the 2x2 spread, you see the corners, they're covering the 2Y. Well, who's covering the corners or the wide receivers that are like in the slot wide receivers, right? Well, that's where those boundary safeties and the field safety comes into play as well too. They actually have to pick up if they're playing man to man, or sometimes if they might have that Will and that Sam take a route as well too. Just depends on what they're doing. A lot of times you're going to see a lot of zone coverage and something of this nature. So that way, you're not having these safeties and linebackers running routes with the wide receiver there. What makes this defense vulnerable, and what you see here is if right now I'm looking at the Sam and I'm looking at the Will, okay, so the S and the W, and if you look at between the field safety and the Will, that what is in between there is called the seam. If you look at the boundary safety and the Sam, what is there is called the seam, okay? Those are the most vulnerable spots in a 3-3-5 defense. And so a lot of times what will end up happening is offenses, the way they attack this defense is they will try to get balls into that seam or to the edges. So if you look at the offensive line, the two dots at the end of the offensive line are the tackles, right? Anything of there going from right or to left is called the edges. The edges and the seams are the best way offenses are going to try to attack this type of defense. And so I'm sure Tony White, in his long experience using this, knows that. And that's where a lot of zone coverage comes into play. A lot of blitzing comes into play. A lot of stunting comes into play. What they do in the defensive line to try to take away those things as well too.
Exactly. That is the one way, that is kind of the one weakness of this defense, right? And so that's why, you need those edge setters to be real dominant guys there. And, you know, when we talk about simulated pressures, you might see the linebackers walk down up to the line of scrimmage and pretend like they're going to blitz, but maybe one comes, maybe one backs out.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things here. And again, this is using just a 2x2 spread formation. But if you were to see kind of a trip, say you had a trip to the right here, maybe the side that the running back is on, then you would see those safeties kind of rotate over.
Correct.
You would see the boundary safety would roll over, the rover safety would roll over, and then you would have the free safety playing deep middle. And so, again, that's that link of the chain that we talk about.
Right.
And so, again, there are some weaknesses to this defense, but there are a lot of strengths, too. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, what I was just going to say is another just a little wrinkle that you'll want to watch for is if another way offenses will try to attack this defense is is what you talked about, is the trips. They will put, yeah, you know, three wide receivers to the strong side, and then they'll run plays like what, let me give you a buck sweep. So a buck, yeah, sweep is you'll take two of your guards, your right guard, your left guard, and you will pull them, right, as the running back is coming, or you can do a jet buck sweep as well. And what ends up happening is your center will take that tackle, right, the nose tackle out. Let's say you're running it to the left, your left tackle will then take that edge out. Well, when you have the two guards pulling around, guess who's there to get to the running back? Nobody, because, yeah, now you've outflanked, you've out-edged that three line there. And so what a lot of times do on the 3-3-5 is that if the defensive coordinator or the linebackers or whoever's making that call recognizes that, oh, we're vulnerable to a buck sweep, they will slide over those linebackers to make sure that if they see that 3-by-1, yeah, you know, that trip side, that they're covered if there's two pulling guards that's coming.
Yeah, because then you're going to be left with one linebacker and two offensive linemen.
Correct.
Which is another reason why that they'll have their eyes in the backfield on run, that's plays, right, because you need support from your secondary. Because, right, you know, I mean, offensive linemen, look, they're trying hard, but, right, they can bull right over a DB, but you got to catch them first. That's so, right, you hope that you, that's, can, right, get by them in space. Now, we've talked a lot about the base defense. Let's talk about how they create different fronts, yes, with the 3-3-5, because, again, this is a very, very multiple defense. And I think with the pieces that he has, you will see them use this a lot. I mean, I think some of the film that I watched about, you know, really only 20 to 25% was in some of these different looks. So it's a, right, major part of this defense. And so, again, let me remind you what the base defense here looks like. Three down linemen, three linebackers lined up behind them, five DBs across the back. Now, if you want to get to a four-man front, you would slide the line either to one side or the other, and you would walk a linebacker down. So now, right, you can see where you bumped. And maybe my dots aren't in the exact spot. I was trying to do this.
No, you're about right. Yeah.
But you would have the end and the tackle and the other defensive end bump down.
That's right.
Then you bring the linebacker down, which gives you that four-man front, which basically is kind of almost creating a 4-2-5,
right?
In a sense, you just have a linebacker walked up as your defensive line. But again, we're going to talk about personnel in a minute. It's just the versatility of this defense. You want guys who can rush the pass, who can, absolutely, set that edge as a run blocker. It's the versatility of the players that allows you to do this. So really, that's kind of how you make a four-man front. Now, the other front that you're going to see a lot of is a five-man bear front, also bear, referred to as a 5-1. So you, right, will have five down linemen with a Mike linebacker over the top. So again, here is where you have pinched the line in.
Yep.
The two ends are now covering up the guards. You leave the nose where he's at, right, and you have walked up a linebacker on each end. And so now you leave that one linebacker over the middle. You have all your gaps covered, so you can just have him kind of there spying, and then you keep the coverage, and the rover safety is now just going to kind of be playing over the top. Right. And so that is the beauty of this defense, Michael, is that you can create so many different front looks.
That's right.
And you can also do it through blitz packages, right?
Yep.
There's times where they may be lined up in a four-man front, but then they blitz a safety off the edge, which,
that's,
essentially,
right,
creates a bear front.
That's right.
And so, again, man, when you talk about the versatility of this defense, that you can start in a base look and create a four-man front or create a five-man bear front, it just allows you to adapt to so many different styles of offense that it's so confusing, because they do this without really changing a lot of the personnel too. So you, right, don't really know, you know, they could be lined up in a 3-3-5 pre-snap, and then all of a sudden they read the defense, they make a shift, and you're in a five-man front. And so it,
correct,
just really throws offenses off. So that is an example we wanted to provide of how you make the different fronts in the defense here, going from a 3-to-4 to a five-man front.
Well, and what I love about it too is that, you know, you could, like you said, you could literally start the play in a three-man front, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, as the quarterback's making checks, you know, a lot of the 3-3-5 is checks too. Like, you have a check for a check. Basically, as they say, a check for a check. So the quarterback makes a check, the defense is making a check. Nick Saban really made this very popular in his 3-4 defense, and then it started kind of permeating throughout all of the defenses, a check for a check. So in the 3-3-5, if the quarterback checks, and let's say they make a shift or a motion, you could literally check a safety and another safety or a corner into a blitz, and then you went from a 3-man front to a 5-man front right at the snap. But guess what? Yeah. The offense wasn't anticipating, the offensive line wasn't anticipating a five-man front. They were anticipating a three-man front. So they set the protection for a three-man front. Exactly. Now you got two unaccounted guys that now they have to be adjusted for, which is going to throw timing and everything else off. You have that. You could literally be in a five-man front, right? And they think, oh, we got five guys coming, so we're going to set the protection there. Boom. Drops out. You got eight-man in coverage. Now the quarterback's like, oh, gosh, got to figure out the time. He's either got a scramble or he's got a hole into the ball that gives your time, your guys, to get there as well, too. Then, of course, you have all the exotic blitz packages. This is a very exciting defense.
It's
complicated. It's flexible, and it's very versatile.
Yeah, and that's the thing is Tony White talked about how, yeah, we play defense, right? We're supposed to defend things, but we also want to attack the offense. We want to be an offensive defense, if that makes sense, right? But again, the versatility that you talk about here, and we'll transition into some of the core concepts of Tony White's defense here, because the first one that I bring up is versatility, right? This defense is dubbed an almost positionless defense. We've heard them talk about that before. It's adjustable to multiple schemes and multiple personnel, depending on what you have on your roster, which is the beauty of it. Because, you know, again, we talk about how, okay, we compared the Big Ten earlier, which is a very run-heavy conference, but he's also used it in the ACC, which is a very pass-heavy conference. Right. And he's had great run defenses. So you can kind of really attack both ways there, depending on what the offense is throwing at you by having that versatility. But it's also a lot about the personnel, right? There's a lot of hybrid personnel. You're going to hear a lot of tweeners. That's kind of like where you're between one position and the other. You're maybe not big enough to be one and maybe too big to be the other. So you're going to see a lot of those types of guys, right? And the one good example of that is the jack position. Mm. We've heard a lot of them talk about that a lot. It is a hybrid player that, in a sense, is a linebacker who can rush or a D lineman who can play a linebacker. Now, Terrence Knight talked about this in the in his coach's luncheon, and he said that some of the guys that they're looking at that can play this position are Stephon Thompson, Juice Crier, Elijah Herring. From a defensive line standpoint, you have James Williams, Diamante Diggs, and Amari Williams are the guys who are, you know, they have size, but they also have that athleticism, like a bigger linebacker or maybe a smaller defensive end. Those are the guys that can play that position. And to give you a good idea of what it takes to play the Rover position that we're going to talk about next, it was originally under Rocky Long was called the Lobo at New Mexico. And their Rover was Brian Urlacher. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of tells you what the deal was there, the kind of player that you want in the Rover position. Now, Rover combines linebacker physicality with defensive back coverage skills. That allows you to create have creative blitz packages, ability to add an extra defender to the box in case of a run play for run support, and it allows you to disguise a lot of coverages. Now, like we talked about, Earl Little Jr. is the guy we're looking at to be the Rover safety there, and he's, you know, he's a downhill hard-hitting guy. Right. He's just maybe a little bit smaller than you would typically expect from the Rover position. But those are really two of the best examples of hybrid type of players in this defense.
Yeah. This is a, you know, we're looking at, not to get too much into personnel, but looking at Earl Little Jr. in that sense, that Rover is an important, it's an important role because it gets moved all over the field. I mean, you're using it in coverage, you're using it in blitzing, you're using it in mid-level coverage. So that, that 5 to 10 yard kind of coverage range there, it, you're using it in cover one. Sometimes the Rover is the one, the cover one, the deep safety there, and then, or the cover three as well too. So it's an important position. And I like the fact that this defense is so versatile in the fact that you can leverage different athletes and be, they can be, multiple trained, you know, if you're in the dirt, this is the techniques you're using. If you're the Sam, if you're the Will, if you're the Mike, if you're the Rover, right, you're probably not going to be a boundary or field safety, probably not going to be a corner, but there are like three different levels of positions that you can get trained on and then be moved all over. So that way the offense can't say, oh, well, this player's in, they're definitely running that, right?
Yeah. Oh, they can't key on your personnel.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing that I thought was interesting that Tony White talked about was how they teach concepts because it's easier to learn and understand than specific assignments versus specific looks, which, again, can tip off the offense to maybe if you have this person in for that look or something like that. But he does want guys to understand how the entire defense works versus memorizing just specific assignments in case you do have to get moved around. But, man, point number two, and this might be my favorite point of all of it. Again, this is one of the most versatile defenses you're going to find. But one of my favorite points about this is aggressive play. He prioritizes energy, speed, and dominant contact is a Tony White staple. And man, I just love that, because one thing that they say is, look, we will take effort, energy, and speed over production, or excuse me, perfection all day long, because you want players to just play fast and free without overthinking assignments.
Right.
Now, he said that minimizes hesitation and maximizes disruption, because what it does is, you know, when you understand what you're able to do without overthinking it, you can be one step and go.
That's right.
And you can just react. And what that does is that leverages the athletic ability that you have. You're not making guys think. And really, man, this is something that we saw far too often with Adam Fuller. What we kept hearing throughout the season, we had to simplify until it was like, man, I mean, what are we doing here?
What are you running, right?
Right. And so I think that's the difference with this is, yes, it's a complicated defense, but it's simple in a sense too, that you let guys just use really kind of their athletic ability to leverage that skill set. And the one thing that I will say with this that may be frustrating at times is that can cause occasional mistakes, right? But the way the staff looks at it is those are correctable. And
right.
Terrence Knighton talked about that in Jacksonville in his last interview, where he was like, look, man, there's going to be some mistakes, but we can coach that up, right? The biggest thing is playing with the effort, the energy, and the intensity, and going 100% on every rep. And he's like, we can fix the mistakes, but we can't fix your motor. And so it's all about having high motor guys. And then, like I said, the dominant contact, man, he emphasizes just bringing physicality and aggression back to that kind of Mickey Andrews style approach, man. He wants, you know, they say, if we hit you, that ball carrier should be going backwards. You know, if we're sacking the quarterback, you want to get him on the ground. And so, man, I just love that kind of headhunter mentality that they preach in this defense.
Well, yeah, I think something that is so undervalued in this is that with Tony White, he doesn't have a specific position that he's coaching. He's got position coaches for each position on the defense.
Yeah.
So it allows him to actually go around and actually coach technique, to make corrections, and to teach players the entirety of the offense. You know, one of the knocks that was on defense, on Adam Fuller, not to like just keep digging in his grave or piling on his grave, is that, you know, he's a secondary guy. He's focused a lot on secondary with Patrick Surtain. And he didn't really help guys understand the full concept of what he was trying to run. So when they talked about simplifying it, it was like just taking plays out. But the thing is, okay, you can take plays out of a playbook, but if I don't understand the concept of why I'm running something, I'm never going to get it. So therefore, I'm going to end up in the wrong place. I'm going to choose a wrong gap, right? Now, the loafing, that's on me, but everything else is on you as a coach. And so what I love about this is that the ability for Florida State to be aggressive on the defense is going to be largely encouraged by the fact that Tony White has the ability to then go around and train and teach and correct those mistakes and say, hey, look, the reason why we need you to hit this A gap or this B gap, or the reason why we need you to go 7 to 8 yards into this seam, is because on the totality of what we're running here, this is what's happening.
Exactly, which is why it's important for guys to understand what the entire defense is doing and the concepts of why they're doing it. Now, the third point, which we kind of hinted at already here, of the core concepts, is confusion for offenses. The 3-3-5 creates confusion for offenses by presenting atypical fronts and pressure packages. Offensive linemen often struggle to identify assignments due to the alignment's ability to disguise blitzes and coverage schemes. It also attacks offenses in untraditional ways, making it difficult for quarterbacks and coordinators to predict. And this is what I was talking about when I asked Tommy Castellanos at Media Days. I said, hey, look, man, nobody faces this defense like you do every single day in practice. So give me some thoughts on it. And it was funny. He kind of smirked a little bit like, yeah, trust me, I know. And so when I said it, he laughed and he said, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's really difficult. It's a headache. I by far think it's one of the most difficult defenses to face. And he elaborated how difficult it is to pick up on what the defense is doing schematically. So again, you're confusing the offensive lineman, you're confusing the quarterback, you're confusing maybe what the coordinator expects for them to throw at you, because it is such a versatile defense. Now, obviously, there are some strengths and weaknesses to this, right? Or else everybody would run a 3-3-5.
That's right.
But I think you're seeing it become more popular nowadays because of the versatility and what you can do with maybe not having all those big defensive linemen. But again, man, it's just the confusion of the offense kind of allows you to attack them and bring it to them versus them attack you because they know what you're going to do. And so, man, that is a really, really big part of this defense. It's just creating kind of confusion and chaos by the offense. And then you take advantage because you know what you're bringing at them.
Yeah, again, like we talked about earlier, I mean, if you're an offense, you're a quarterback, you know, you're the offensive line, you're making checks, you're a wide receiver, you're thinking, I got single coverage here, right, because the safeties have moved over, and then boom, the ball snapped, and then you see a boundary or field safety come right over you. Now you got 2-on-1, and wide receiver's like, wait, I thought I had this, and offensive line thought I had 3 guys coming, I have 5 guys coming, I thought I had 5 guys coming, I have 4 guys coming, I thought I had 3 guys coming, I have 8 guys coming. Like, it because of the way you can shield this quarterback thinking he's throwing in the man coverage, and then boom, he gets hit with a pick there because he was actually throwing in the cover 3 because they had the Will and the Sam back out into the seams. I mean, it can be super confusing if you don't really try to study and understand this as well, too. Now, this doesn't mean, like you said, Jesse, you make a great point. If this was the all-world beater, everybody would be running this. Every offensive scheme, just as like every defensive scheme, has its weakness. The 3-3-5, we talked about it earlier, the seams and the edges. If you're an offensive coordinator, you can figure out how to attack the seams and the edges, you're going to have a lot of success in this.
Yeah. And again, you got to have the players maybe undersized or whatever, depending on how you recruit, but they got to be good, man. You got to be able to set the edge. You got to have linebackers who can trigger fast. But some additional points that I want to talk about here that aren't necessarily the core concepts, but I find really interesting is, first off, this really after last year, Michael, this is music to my ears, right? Good fundamentals. Mm. This is one of the staples of a Tony White defense, right? One thing we've heard, and that shows up on film, especially when I watch some of the Nebraska games, man, they play hard. They play hard for him. There is good pursuit. They fly around and get to the ball after last year's loafing. I just love to see this, man. And really, you know, we had talked about this before where we have heard that the message of Adam Fuller was kind of falling on deaf ears, right? And I think that's why you had a lot of the issues that we had last year. But, man, they play hard for Tony White. And we've seen this so far throughout early camp. Now, again, I know we haven't even touched the grass yet in a real game.
Right.
But just playing hard and having good fundamentals will see such a massive uptick in the defense, because one of the things last year that outside of loafing that just drove me nuts, man, was, I'm sorry to say, piss poor tackling, right? Yeah. There's no other way to say it.
Yes.
And so one thing that's really going to get you excited, Michael, when you hear that is, I looked it up. Syracuse finished top 10 in team tackle grade in 2021 and 2022. Nebraska was top 15 in 2023. FSU finished top 25 once under Adam Fuller in 5 years. So, man, I'm just really, just to hear that they play hard and they tackle well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's half the defensive struggles that we had last year.
Yeah. Well, and I think that could be a credit to the fact that we're hearing that they're bringing physicality back to practice, that they're actually like taking people to the ground. They're hitting each other early on. You talked about that accelerated, trying to get to that point. Like, I think that matters when it comes to tackling. You know, we've gotten to this age of football that, yes, we want to be very protective. We want to make sure we put the players in the best position to not sustain energy. But football is a physical sport. You have to be physical. And if you ever wonder why Florida State struggles so much under Adam Fuller in tackling, look at the lack of physicality in practice. Yep. I love that Tony White's bringing that back.
That is something we have complained about the entire time they've been here. Because you to be physical on Saturday, you got to start during the week. Now, like you said, you got to do load management and be careful with guys getting hurt. But if the first time you get physical and tackle is on Saturday, you get the results that we saw on the field, right?
That's right.
Now, one of the other top points that I saw when assessing this defense was, man, it is really good. It is a strong run defense, right? Yeah. That's obvious by the run defense that he's been able to put together. It's also good at limiting explosive plays.
Yes.
So when you talk about explosives, which are plays over 20 yards, Syracuse in 2021 was 39th in the country, but then in 2022, they were third in the country in the least amount of explosive plays allowed. Nebraska in 23, year one under Tony White, fourth in the least amount of explosive plays allowed. So, man that's huge, right? Yeah. And then 2024, they were 19th. So 3 out of your 4 years here, again, excluding 2020, you were top 20 and two top five in limiting explosive plays. And of course, the run defense speaks for itself. 26th in 2021 at Syracuse, again, with a lack of talent there. 59th in 2022, but then two top 10 run defenses in a row at Nebraska, 9th and 8th. But, Michael, the interesting thing about that, when you talk about run defense and limiting explosives, typically to take away one thing, you got to give something else up, right?
Right.
But that's not the case with this defense. It does not mean that the pass defense has to suffer at the expense of the run defense. In 2024, now, keep in mind, this is the Big Ten, right, that we're talking about here. But in 24, Nebraska's defense did not allow a single game with over 300 yards passing. Except for the bowl game, which they gave up 301 to Boston College, but Tony White did not coach in that bowl game. So he was technically not a part of that. So he didn't allow, his defense did not allow a single, under his direction, game with over 300 yards passing in 2024. And they did face two top 10 passing offenses that season, plus Ohio State at 29th, which, side note, they held the reigning national champion Ohio State to their second lowest yardage and third lowest point total last year. But continuing on that trend, they only gave up 300 passing yards in one game in two seasons at Nebraska. Now, they didn't face a ton of good offenses, but when you look back to Syracuse, they only allowed two games over 300 yards in 2022, and both of those were pass-heavy teams that threw it 43 and 56 times, and they also had two in 2021. One of those in both years was Wake Forest, because, you know, that's Sam Hartman days where they were just throwing the ball all around the field. For comparison, right, talking about run and pass defense and how you can be good at both, FSU allowed seven games with over 300 yards passing from 2021 to 2024. Tony White was at five. So just a hair better by Tony White. Not a lot, but here's where it gets impressive, right? In that same time frame, Florida State held, under Adam Fuller, held teams under 100 yards rushing 11 times in that same span. Tony White defenses did it 26 times. So you literally, it's not even comparable, right? I mean, it's just, it's really not. So, I mean, when you're talking about, not often you give up more than 300 yards, and really often you hold teams under 100 yards rushing, man, that just makes my mouth water for this defense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you can do that, if you can, gosh, the different ways that you can get into those run-stopping fronts, or just even, I've even seen where there, it is a 3-5. A 3-3. Like, it's three down, three linebackers, and you're like, okay, this, I should be able to run. And boom, they're right there at you, meeting you at the gap. Man, that's incredible, and that's exciting. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, again, those stats just show you what's possible, that you can be good at both without giving up one or the other to do it. And so, man, again, just a lot of exciting stuff. And if you get a big year out of your defensive line with a Daryl Jackson and you know, the type of guys that he really hasn't had in the past, it just allows you to do more with that defense as well. So, Michael, before we get into some final thoughts on this episode and kind of wrap things up on Tony White, I want to bring you one more quick word from a sponsor that just dropped some new merch that you guys are going to want to check out, and that is Roback. Now, Jameis Winston is a Roback athlete, so I put him on the ad here as well. But, man, these new polos that they dropped and a couple new hoodies and quarter zips, these prints are awesome, right? They're just awesome. And you can see it if you're watching on YouTube here. Now, the thing with Roback is, look, man, it's not cheap. I'll be honest with you, but the quality is off the charts. I'll be honest, man, they sent me some stuff whenever we first started, right? And it's my go-to hoodie and my go-to polo. It is really, really great stuff. And get 20% off your first order with code SPEAR. Pro tip, if you've already ordered from Roback, you can just create a new email and use the promo code for your new first order. So make sure you check those out. Man, they got awesome stuff. So just wanted to bring you guys a quick word from that. 20% off with code SPEAR. So, Michael, let's get into some final thoughts here and kind of wrap this episode up talking about Tony White. So really for me, man, there's a couple of main points here. We'll talk about kind of some positive thoughts and then some concerns, right? And so first positive thought for me is quick improvement, right? Tony White massively improved the defense at Syracuse and Nebraska within the first year or two. Again, I kind of throw out the pandemic year at Syracuse there, but I mean, within 1 to 2 years, you saw a massive improvement. He's got more talent to work with at FSU than he's ever had. Although Nebraska wasn't really far off, you still got more on the roster at Florida State. So to me, you're not coming into a terrible situation taking over this defense. Yeah. But if you could see a similar type of improvement that we saw at Nebraska, that we saw at Syracuse, man, this defense can have a really good year in year one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He really could. If he's able to instill the type of aggressiveness and attitude, and also just, again, understanding the concepts, then you could see a huge improvement, a jump from where we were previously last year, that maybe gets them into a place where now they're helping Florida State stay in the game, right? They're not allowing that. They're going to give up some points. They're going to give up yards. You know, again, one of the things I love that you talked about that really helped me was, like, you know, yeah, yards per play and all like that, that's important, but man, it's not as important as scoring defense. You can get all the yards you want, but if you're not scoring, you got a chance. And so what we're hoping is that as they bend, they don't break, because, you know, they don't have all the talent they necessarily need, but they got better talent, the best talent he's ever worked with here. And so, yeah, I think if they can do that, then it'll be a more successful season than what was previously anticipated.
Exactly. And for me, like I always say, man, people love to talk about total defense. I think it's an antiquated stat.
Yeah.
Yards don't win games. Points do. Right. The scoring defense is what really matters. So when you hear people say, oh, he had a top whatever, it doesn't matter, man. It's all about points, right? And you may have this Gus Malzahn put you in some tough positions, you know, on occasion when you run that hurry up offense. The funny thing is, Gus Malzahn said the hardest thing about running his offense is selling it to the defensive coordinator, because it's going to junk up your stats a little bit, because you may give them more at bats, right?
Right.
But I think you bring up an interesting point too. Adam Fuller ran a lot of that bend but don't break type of defense.
That's right.
Kind of like, you know, Belichick ran in New England, right? And it was really, really frustrating to watch a lot of times. I like that this is a downhill attacking style defense.
Right.
They're not waiting to get in the red zone. They're trying to attack you from play number one. But point number two that I have here on the positive side is the schedule. I think it does set him up for having success in year one. Only four teams on this year's schedule finished with an offense ranked in the top 60 last year. That was Miami, Clemson, Bama, and Pitt. Look, Miami was gutted at the skill positions this year. I don't think they're going to be out here putting up 40 points a game like they did last year, right? Bama's breaking in a new quarterback, and, you know, no matter what people's thoughts on Jalen Milroe was, he was their leading passer and their leading rusher. So that offense could take a step back at least early in the season. I think Clemson will be good there. And Pitt's not really a dangerous offense. They were kind of farther down the list. Obviously, there's going to be some challenges, right? And teams are allowed to get better or worse, but this is not a murderer's row of offenses either. And so it will be kind of interesting. Like I said, I think there was, what I say earlier, three or four offenses ranked outside the top 100, not including the FCS team. So you got five offenses that you should absolutely feast on. And then there's a couple that are going to be really good, but those good offenses outside of maybe Clemson that brings everybody back, they all have a lot of questions to answer too. So I think, the early success that we've seen combined with the schedule that you have this year, I think sets you up for success in year one right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you're able to, again, there are eight games that are very winnable on that schedule, you know, with this defense. And so and in those eight games, I think you're facing offenses that you should have the ability to control. I think there are four games that might be a little bit harder for you that you'll have to figure out. But the eight games, this defense should see some modicum of success against them.
Yeah, and they've done really good at feasting on those bad offenses. And so that's good to see. Because hopefully, again, you can get in some garbage time and start developing some of these younger players too. Now, the last positive point I have here for why 2025 can be a good defensive year for us is better beginnings, right? The situation he inherited at FSU wasn't great from a record standpoint, but the defense wasn't nearly as bad as what he inherited in the past at Syracuse and Nebraska. So he's not starting off as badly as his previous spots, even though there's a ton of new starters. I mean, it's not really last year's defense, but it wasn't like the cupboard was completely void, right? And you did a good job in the portal with who you brought in. Now, he also brought with him two position coaches and two players, which will help smooth that transition. I feel like that's going to help get everybody up to speed a little bit faster. And so, man, when you take into all those things into account, I think that's going to set him up to have a really good season in 2025, that you're walking into probably the best situation you've been in. I'm not worried about last year's record. I'm talking about right now with what you have at hand with a defense that wasn't awful last year. You got the best situation you've ever walked into with the most talent. You got a history of quick improvement and a schedule that allows it. So to me, man, that makes for a really good opportunity. We got to see it on the field first, right? You go out and give 50 points up to Alabama, maybe we're going to rewind this tape a little bit. But man, I think the pieces are there for them to have a really good season in 2025.
The pieces are there for this defense to be for sure better than last season. And I know this is a different season. We're not talking about last season, but the pieces are there for there to be quick improvement, to yeah. see a noticeable change in demeanor,
yep.
in attitude, obviously for him in skill set, right? The teams he's going to face, that those offenses that he's going to go up, well, not him himself, but he's going to coach against,
right.
and the players are going to see, there is great opportunity for there to be a monochrome of success this season. Now, he has to translate that through the players on the field. And until we see that, you know, we can all speculate all we want, but it has to show up on the field. If it shows up on the field, then Florida State fans, we will be hopefully very happy at the end of the year, because, you know, we're going to probably a decent bowl game, or we're probably maybe even looking on the outside end to the ACC championship, which then has us looking on the outside end to the college football invitational playoffs. So there is great opportunity ahead of this time.
Yeah. And, you know, even I just want to circle back real quick. Even if we joke about giving up a lot of points to Bama, even if that maybe is the case, right? Mm-hmm. You get those 3 weeks afterwards to That's really right. batten down the hatches there. And Virginia is not a great offense. They were one of the ones that were ranked outside the top 100. Yep. Now they got some change too this year on their offense. But man, if you can, even if things don't go well in game one, you can get some things fixed by the time you get to that Virginia game. And I really do think, as much as I would love to have one of those cupcake games first, I think that 3 week stretch of, you know, a cupcake game, a bye week, and then another cupcake game, man, that's going to allow you to kind of get up to speed really fast early in the season for that stretch later on. But let's talk about the main concerns that maybe we have with this defense. So, Michael, for me, and I talked about this before, is he's had a few games against good offenses get away from him. And that's kind of what worries me. So throughout his time as a DC, he's faced 7 top 25 offenses in the past 5 years. He's allowed an average of 36.7 points per game against them, 40.6 at Nebraska, and they gave up 56 points to Indiana last year. Now, when you talk about Gus Malzahn's offense, it's an offense that we feel like can go get you 31-ish, 35-ish points a game, maybe on a good day. But you're looking at a kind of mid-30s type of offense. If you're giving up 40 points a game to some good offenses, and granted, they're good offenses for a reason, right? There's been a couple games that got away from him. So he will face 3 teams in 2025 that had a top 2025 or had a top 25 offense in 2024. Again, things are allowed to change, but that's Miami, Clemson, and Bama, which are games that you were kind of already up against the wall, right? And so right. you hope that those with better talent means better results paired with a better offense. But that is what really concerns me the most about this, is that you've had a couple of games get away from you against the better offenses. And the thing is that kind of leads me into my concern number two, which is part of number one, is that bad offenses in the Big Ten could have produced somewhat inflated results, because you saw him take a massive step at Nebraska, but a third, literally 33.3%, 9 out of 24 games that they faced, the offenses were ranked 100th or below, plus an FCS team. That's not hard to be good against, right? And then we just talked about it. The ones, the 3 good offenses that you faced in 2 years, 2 of them got away from you.
Right.
So that is the one thing that concerns me, because when you compare that to what he faced at Syracuse, only 14.7% of the offenses there were ranked outside the top 100. So the thing is, he had good results there too. So that right. does make me feel a little bit better about this. But, you know, again, man, the 3 top 25 offenses, you gave up 45 to one and 56 to another. And then Ohio State was the other one at 21. So that was a good game. But the fairness of it is, look, our schedule has bad offenses too. He's going to have his fair share of bad defenses, but it's the good offenses and his history against them. It does make me a little bit nervous that maybe things can get away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, football, again, football is football. You're going to have your great days. You're going to have your worst days. But when you start to see a pattern, you start to notice like, huh, yeah. I wonder what this is like. And of course, you know, Miami, Clemson, Miami, Clemson, Florida. Who am I missing? Alabama. Yeah. And depending on, you know, I know that first game of the season, Ryan Grubb is back with Kalen DeBoer. That's his, like, his right-hand offensive guy. That's yeah. when they had the most success in the offense. So depending on how that looks, you're going to get right out of the gate a supposed really good offense. And so we'll be able to see kind of where this defense is at, if we're going to have problems with really good offenses, or if maybe he's even made some adjustments now that he has a better talent pool to work with to say, okay, I'm going to be facing these types of offenses and I have these types of players. What little tweaks I can make within this defense that allow us to set us up better to face these kinds of offenses.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, when you talk about that schedule, right, you're going to have to, if you want to get where you want to go, you're going to have to pull an upset in one of those four games against those better offenses. So you give up 40, 50 points, you're not winning that game, not with Gus Malzahn's offense.
No.
And so you just definitely need to, you want to see that be better. That's all I'm saying. So, but Michael, the final point that I want to talk about here, and you know what, man, this stat that I'm about to drop on you is so polarizing. I wanted to save it for our final show. So you're going to hear me repeat it on the final show, right? But just like we talked about with Gus Malzahn's offense is never being supported by a really good defense at UCF. He never had a top 40 defense. Tony White has had it much worse than Gus Malzahn. He has been paired with garbage offenses his entire career. So here's the coordinator pairings, right? Tony White's scoring offense or scoring defense versus the scoring offenses he had to work with. So in 2020, he had the 90th ranked defense, 117th ranked offense. 2021, he had the 64th ranked scoring defense with the 91st ranked offense. 40th in 2022, 70th ranked offense. In 2023, man, 13th ranked defense. Great. Nebraska's offense was 123rd, averaging less than 20 points a game. That is awful. In 2024, oof, another top 20 defense at 17th. Nebraska's offense, 103rd. So the thing is, excluding 2020, man, he's had an average rank of scoring defenses of 34th. So jeez, top 40, essentially. Yeah. That's the number to remember, yeah, top 40.
Okay.
But two of the five seasons as DC, he was paired with an offense that averaged less than 20 points per game and has never even had a top 60 offense to support him. It has just been hot garbage since he became a coordinator. And so I'm sure that's probably why he booked it out of Nebraska. Was like, right, bro, I'm giving you top 20 defenses and you can't even give me 20 points a game, right? But now, again, what we talk about with Gus Malzahn, same situation here. Gus Malzahn had the 38th ranked offense with the 49th ranked defense. 31st, 46th, 41st, 61st, 49th, 82nd. Never had a top 40 defense to go with him. Average rank by Gus is 40th, and he had a top 40 offense in two out of his four seasons, and the third season was at 41st. So basically, he'll go out and get you a top 40 offense. Tony White will go out and get you a top 40 defense, right? Here's the interesting thing why this is all about to be like, oh, whoa, 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 hold up now. Put the Kool-Aid down, buddy. Okay, so top 40 defenses, I looked this up over the past 4 years, typically allow around 23 points per game. Top 30 was around 21. So there's not a big gap there. Tony White's career average is 21.8, 24.7 at Syracuse, 18.9 at Nebraska. The teams on your schedule averaged 28.7 points per game last year. Now, again, I don't think Miami's going to have that type of season and all that stuff. So the point is with Tony White, he faced tougher offenses with less talent at Syracuse. He had more talent at Nebraska, but faced worse offenses. He's also never been supported by even a decent offense. At FSU, I think it's going to fall somewhere between that, right? Tougher offenses, but more talent and supported by a much better offense. Because Gus Malzahn may not be prolific, but he's consistent.
Right.
I don't think you're going to hit the number that you did at Nebraska because of the schedule, but I think it's going to be better than Syracuse because, again, it's a similar schedule with a massive talent disparity. So I can easily see Tony White putting together a top 40 defense in year one with the potential to push towards a top 30 defense when you look at the averages. I think that's a pretty fair assessment there. If you can get a top 40 defense, that's pretty good. Now, why that's significant, Michael, is if you can pair that top 40 defense with a top 40 offense, Florida State can be in a really good place at the end of the season, right? Now, side note, I do worry about the third phase with special teams because Mike Norvell did not have some kind things to say about Jake Weinberg. So we need that to be better. When you're trying to overachieve, you need all three phases, right? But why is having a top 40 offense and a top 40 defense significant? Well, I went and looked at the teams who finished in 2024 with a top 40 offense and a top 40 defense scoring. Now, 16 teams finished top 40 in scoring offense and scoring defense, right? Not a lot, only 16 out of 134. 10 of those 16 teams made the playoffs. 14 of those teams finished with double digit wins. Their combined record was 182-43. Tony White's average scoring defense rank from 21 to 24 was 34th with top 40 in 3 out of 4 years. Gus Malzahn's average scoring rank for 21 through 24, 40th with top 40, basically 3 out of 4 years. Florida State is top 15 in blue chip ratio, transfers included. Coordinators will have more talent to work with. You do play some talented teams in there. But only one team on your schedule also finished top 40 in both last year, and that was Bama. Clemson did not, Miami did not, and Florida did not. If, with what you just heard, if Florida State can pull that off, hey, you do the math, you draw the conclusion. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh.
I'm not punching a ticket to the playoffs. I'm just saying you have a history of two coordinators who have been let down by the other side. If both of them can finish top 40, man, only 16 teams did it, and 10 of them made the playoffs, and 14 finished with double-digit wins.
Man, this is sounding a little bit like your Georgia Tech early on Spidey senses, you know?
Yeah, man, I'm just saying, like, I got the Kool-Aid out. I got the Kool-Aid out after that one.
Listen, I love that. I love that you can see the historical data of when a good offense is paired with a good defense, success can happen. And as you said, I mean, you look at Tony White. He's just not had a offense that would pair well to give his defense a chance to be good, right? You know, yeah. When you're constantly on the field because you're having to do three and out, and now you're on the field for 8, 9, 10 plays every other, you know, drive. Constantly because your offense can't score, or when you're scoring points as an offense, but your defense can't get stopped, so you're just up and down the field, and you know, all the pressure's on you to try to score and win the game. Yeah, of course. So the ability to have those two finally put together and hopefully be able to produce an offense and defense is in top 40 gives us a better window into looking at the playoffs. Yeah, yeah. Bring it on.
Again, I'm not booking a hotel room in Miami just yet. I'm just saying Gus Malzahn's offense has not always been the problem. It's been the defense. Right. For Tony White, the offense has always been the problem, not the defense. So you combine two of those and you look at the numbers.
I'm not saying.
We'll leave it at that. That's going to be it for this episode, guys. If you enjoyed this one, drop a like and subscribe to stay connected with us. If you'd like to take that one step further and help support us with a small financial gift every month, because we are an independent site, we are fan-funded outside of our sponsors here that we have, we would greatly love to have you be a part of the PTS Drive. You can just hit that join or subscribe plus button, whatever they call it nowadays on YouTube, just hit that and you can become a member of the channel. We do have some exclusive benefits for channel members that we're going to be rolling out here shortly. We're just waiting for the community to get built up a little bit. A rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You guys do a great job of that. Also, don't forget, we have a website, plantthespear.com. We've been cranking out some written articles there. We're going to got a couple more in the queue that are getting ready to go up on the site shortly. Make sure you stay tuned for the next half of the defensive preview, where we dig into the personnel and talk about the horses. We talked about the X's and O's. Michael, now it's time to talk about the Jimmys and Joes. That will be rolled out for you guys next week. Again, the season is closing in. There's never been a better time to lock in with your number one source for fan content around Florida State. We appreciate you guys, and we will catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.